regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be talking with Philip Van Cleve of the Virginia Citizens Defense League here in just a moment or two. The Attorney General of Virginia, the Governor of Virginia, getting a reminder from the courts yesterday that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. When a judge in Lynchburg Circuit Court smacked down the argument from the Attorney General that universal background checks can resume in the state of Virginia, background checks on the private transfer of firearms are required. That law has been enjoined for, gosh, I guess a little more than 6 months now. And the Democrats last session said, well, we figured out a way to do an end run around that injunction. And so they passed a law that they claimed addressed the judge's concern. It did not, as you will hear in our conversation with Philip Van Cleve. And yesterday the judge made it official. No, it does not address his concern. The injunction that he put in place last fall remains in place. And now there's this interesting question about how this case moves forward, because the former Attorney General, Jason Meares, had declined to appeal that judge's decision last fall. Does this case, can the judge's decision yesterday even be appealed? Or is this matter once again moot and settled law? It's an open question, because generally we don't see governments ignore court orders as flagrantly as the Attorney General and the Governor of Virginia have done here. So like that old Chinese curse, we do live in interesting times in the Commonwealth of Virginia right now. And one of those groups fighting hard ensure that our rights are not trampled upon is the Virginia Citizens Defense League. Again, very pleased that Philip Van Cleve, head of the VCDL, could spend some time with us today. Take a look and a listen. Phil, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's really good to see you again, and I'm glad we get to talk about some good news today.
Yeah, well, we'll have to quit meeting like this. It's been quite a bit going on here lately. Yeah, a whole lot. And good stuff,
right? We're up to how many Commonwealth attorneys now?
We're up to 14 right now. I got a 15th. I'm waiting for something more official to be put up. I know the position, but I don't want to just quote somebody sending me an email. If possible, I'd rather, but that particular Commonwealth attorney doesn't seem to have a website or something. It's kind of weird, but I'm working on that, so that would put us at 15. Others are just, I've been hearing from other people who've been talking to their Commonwealth attorney that, well, they don't want to make a public statement, but he told me that he has no interest in prosecuting this stuff.
And I don't know who the 15th is that you're working on. I'm not asking at that point, but, I know that I reached out to the Buckingham County Commonwealth attorney, Kimber Beasley, and he gave a statement to Bearing Arms. I'm hoping that he will release an official statement too, but because this is something I think that Commonwealth attorneys, regardless of what they're saying to their constituents, I think they do need to go on the record, quite frankly.
Well, yeah. Forward me that article, because I think I missed that. I catch Bearing Arms. I may have missed that one somehow in all this craziness going on, because I would consider that good enough to put him on the list. He's publicly told Bearing Arms. It's not like he told some individual constituent. He's told a publication. Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable. We've got another one of those. I just said, okay, you're covered. You're in the public saying this in the press. So I just need somewhere to point so that people go, well, is this really true?
Yeah. Okay. No problem. I will get that to you later today. But the reason why I asked you to come on the show today, and the reason why I'm wearing a Lynchburg Hillcats baseball cap, even though they're no longer the Hillcats, is in Lynchburg Circuit Court yesterday, VCDL, Gun Owners of America, getting a big win. And, the background, in case folks aren't aware, there's an ongoing lawsuit. Well, it was kind of over and done with, right? I mean, this started back in 2020, but in 2025, Judge F. Patrick Yates said that Virginia's universal background check scheme, as it was being conducted, was unconstitutional because there were essentially separate rules for how adults 18 to 20 were being treated, and then how adults 21 and older were being treated. He granted a permanent injunction against enforcement of that universal background check law. The state legislature comes back. Democrats say, all right, we're gonna fix this. And with the HB 1525, they thought they had fixed it. Their fix, though, was that they simply banned adults under the age of 21 from purchasing handguns in a private sale. You're no longer allowed to purchase those guns at all. GOA, VCDL, you guys rightfully said, well, that doesn't fix the law. That makes it worse. But Governor Spanberger, Attorney General Jay Jones said, oh, no, it's fine now. And they told the Virginia State Police, start enforcing these background checks on private sales. They filed a motion to dismiss this injunction, although the Attorney General claimed that the injunction was moot anyway. And you all filed a motion to hold the head of the Virginia State Police in contempt. Yesterday, we had this hearing on these competing motions, Judge Patrick Yates siding with the plaintiffs here, right? And instructing the state to stop enforcing the law on private transfers of handguns. So this new bill, or this new law, according to the judge, does not rectify the problems that exist with this background check scheme. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. He did not hold the head of the state police in contempt. I don't know. Of course, I think it was clear that he made it clear that he expected the state police and all law enforcement to not be enforcing universal background checks. Period. Now, I have a conjecture that maybe he was lenient, because it was probably the Attorney General telling the state police, you know, the Commonwealth, you know, a version of the statewide attorney, mm-hmm. saying, oh, no, we're OK. Go ahead and start enforcing these. You know, we've fixed the problem. And so it might have been that the state police was doing this in good faith based upon the Attorney General saying that this is okay, we've covered it, don't worry about it, go ahead and enforce it. That might be, I don't know that's a fact, but it right. certainly would make sense to me that he might have been lenient, saying, okay, you know, you were really giving bad advice, you should still know the law, but you asked an attorney and you got bad advice. That's yeah. my guess.
But going forward now, the judge has been pretty clear.
Oh, yes.
You're not doing this.
Absolutely.
And I'm not seeing any written opinion from Judge Yates yet. I hope that we get to see one here soon. But what was the judge's reasoning? Did he say that 1525 did not cure the defects in the background check law? Did he get into the ability of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds to purchase handguns lawfully under the Virginia Constitution?
I think there's going to be like a part two to this where maybe some of that's discussed. Okay. I'm not sure. I'm not an attorney, but I believe a major problem there. And even here in Virginia, we had a federal court ruling that you cannot ban 18 to 20-year-olds. And this dealt with the federal law of not being able to buy from a federal FFL a handgun right. if you're a young adult. You know, a judge here said that's baloney, and that got appealed and is bouncing around. But that may have been part of the thinking, saying, you know, because in the original ruling, he left the door open to be talking about not just the fact that they couldn't buy pistols, but other issues. So I think that's basically, yeah, he feels like there's still a definite problem. And I think you just cannot tell 18 to 20-year-olds you cannot buy a handgun. That's ridiculous. There's no way they're going to show that. His history and tradition in America. Are you kidding me? You were expected to be in the militia at 16.
Right. Yeah.
They're not going to be telling you, oh, you turned 18. Oh, now you can't have guns for 3 years. What?
Right. And as you say, we got a good decision at the district court level. The Fourth Circuit, unfortunately, reversed that decision. And now that case and several others are up on appeal to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court has just kind of sat on those cases. I expect they're going to be granted, vacated, remanded after the Hamani and Wolford decisions, because we do have almost a half dozen cases from around the country dealing with this issue. We've got circuit court splits, but for some reason, the Supreme Court hasn't granted cert in these cases. But, you know, in state court, you're not just dealing with the Bill of Rights, the federal Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment. You're dealing with the Virginia Constitution as well.
Yes. Yeah.
The Virginia Constitution is abundantly clear that adulthood starts at age 18. And Judge Yates, going back to some of his previous decisions, has talked about this, that there's nothing in the history and tradition of gun regulation that says, well, some law-abiding adults can be denied their right to keep and bear arms because of their age, but others can't. If that was the case, Phil, I mean, honestly, if that's the rationale, that, well, you know, yes, you're a legal adult, but you're too young. Yeah, you could make that same argument that, yes, you're a legal adult, you're a law-abiding adult, but you're too old. You're 70. You're 80.
Yeah.
So you've aged out of your right to keep and bear arms. I mean, that's a very dangerous proposition.
Right. And if you think about it, Cam, you know, in reflecting on this, you know, originally Judge Yates shot it down because it took away absolutely the ability of an 18 to 20-year-old to purchase a handgun. There was no way at that point. That's why he said, no, you cannot. Right,
because you had to go through a NICS check.
So now the way the General Assembly fixed it was say, okay, well, we'll take away the rights of them to be able to open guns completely, which is exactly why he killed. And now that I'm thinking about it, that makes a lot more sense. He's just saying you're still doing it wrong, guys.
Yeah.
You cannot deny young adults the ability to purchase a handgun. You cannot do it. And by the way, they threw an assault firearm as something they couldn't buy either. It was both of those.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So now they can't even buy a long gun if it's the wrong type.
Right.
So I think in that sense, it all makes that's uncertain. That's what it is. They thought the General Assembly somehow interpreted what the judge said as saying, well, if you throw gasoline on a fire, it'll quench it, you know.
Right.
And they said, oh, okay.
The one thing that that this has done, though, is that this has reopened the case, right? So then Attorney General Jason Meares, after that permanent injunction, he decided not to appeal. And then folks might remember Attorney General Jay Jones, before he was sworn into office, sought to intervene. He basically asked the Virginia Supreme Court, hey, I'm going to be the Attorney General soon, and I want to enforce this law. So let me go ahead and start representing the state a few months early. Virginia State Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to let you do that. but now Jones can appeal Judge Yates's decision that was handed down yesterday, right? He can take that to the Virginia Court of Appeals.
Maybe, but the underlying issue, I don't think he can do much about, because the original case, as far as the judge is concerned, nothing had changed. Nothing. Yeah. He put that order in. It did not get appealed within the required time frame because, you know, that again, Meares chose not to do that.
Right.
And it's still in effect. The state police mistakenly thought that they could go ahead and enforce. Judge Yates said, nope, you know, this is still in force. And so I think that's almost uncontestable. If they appeal it, I'm not sure what exactly they think they can do. It's too late. I mean, if somehow Judge Yates had created a whole new, he hadn't said what I had before is still in effect, and come up with something new, that one I think they could appeal. But he's just said, you're wrong. This is still in effect. So I don't think they can do a whole lot there.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I think the Attorney General's making it up as he goes along anyway. So we'll
you know what? This is what I said all along, you know, Cam. You know, yeah, we got the assault weapon ban and everything. The only silver liner in all this is we got Jay Jones defending all that.
That's right. Yeah, no kidding. And I want to ask about that real quick as well, because, I mean, there are, I think, what, seven different lawsuits in between federal and state court. I know that there are, I think, four challenges in state court around the Commonwealth.
Yes, that's correct.
Where did VCDL file their lawsuit against the assault firearm and large capacity magazine?
Lancaster County.
Okay. And what is the status of that lawsuit right now?
We're waiting. We're asking for a preliminary injunction. So that it doesn't go into effect. So we're waiting, you know, right. As long as that preliminary injunction gets heard before the end of the month and is ruled on before the end of the month, because at this point, they're not completely determining the actual answer to the law. This is an injunction. What they do with an injunction is they say the judge just sits back generally at a 5,000 foot view and says, Does this plaintiff have a reasonably good chance of being successful? If the judge thinks, you know, this is a good argument, I think he's going to be successful, they'll grant the injunction. If they're kind of going, whoa, this is off in left field, then they won't grant the injunction.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of looking at the tea leaves, thinking that, you know, one way or the other. So right. We've got four different localities that are involved in this. We're in Lancaster, and there are three other localities involved. I think Washington County might be one of them.
Yeah.
Another one might, not sure if it's York County. I think there's one in York. I think the NRA filed in York County or in that area. But anyhow, each one has different facts. We're kind of approaching the same problem, slightly different angles. We have different plaintiffs, different issues that have come up. And so Jay Jones, in panic mode, wants to not have four judges looking at all this whole issue from different angles, because any one of them could put out a statewide injunction.
Right.
He wants to consolidate it all into one case and then have that, say, you know, held in Richmond, you know, where judges would be very favorable to his point of view, you know? Yeah. And so we're fighting that. What he did was he requested that the Virginia Supreme Court create a 3-judge panel, and that they decide what to do with this, pull it together and put it in one jurisdiction, in which jurisdiction, and so forth and so on. And we're filing against that, saying no, you know, that's a horrible idea, because it's not the same lawsuit filed in four different places. It is different in each one, and every plaintiff in that case needs to be heard on their concerns overall, because this thing opened up a whole can of worms.
Yes, indeed it did. Well, Phil, again, I appreciate everything that you're doing with the VCDL, and of course all of the work that VCDL volunteers are doing around the state of Virginia. We've been talking about the importance of state organizations. Even if you don't live in the state of Virginia, you can join VCDL. You can be a part of the fight. You can help prevent these bad laws from coming to the state where you live. So if folks want to join, I see the sign behind you there, vcdl.org, right? That's the website.
Vcdl.org. You can join there. You can contribute to the fight. These lawsuits are expensive, but we've got to do them, and we need to win. And also, I'm hoping that Virginia will provide a blueprint, should this stuff end up in other states, of how to defeat it. You know, how you can go about this. Mm-hmm. Everything from getting the equivalent of Commonwealth attorneys to stand up and say, this is unconstitutional, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
That was major pushback. I tell you, that lit some fires in the Democrat part of the General Assembly.
We've seen, you know, folks like Scott Surville, Garrett McGuire, some of these anti-gun politicians. I mean, they've just been losing their minds. And it's
Of course, I've been having fun with them. Scott Surville, I said in a tweet, an ex posting to him, I said, you know, you're a very smart man. I met him. I do believe that. Mm-hmm. I said, you don't seem to let that get in the way when it comes to supporting every harebrained gun control scheme out there.
There you go. Well, Phil, again, please keep up the great work. I'm so glad you could join us on the program today. And I look forward to having you here again in the future, because, as you said, there is a lot going on in Virginia right now. I'd love to have you back here in a couple weeks.
Anytime you want, Cam. Appreciate it.
Phil Van Cleve, join us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Phil. And again, thank you to the Gun Owners of America as well for their efforts in this case. And of course, all of these Second Amendment groups across the nation and in the state of Virginia, Virginia Shooting Sports Association, VCDL, who are litigating the ban on so-called assault firearms and large capacity magazines. You know, these are just a couple of the gun control bills that were signed by Governor Abigail Spanberger. There are more laws that are set to come into effect on July the 1st that I think will be subject to legal challenges. HB 21, which is very similar to the public nuisance laws that are being challenged in places like New York and New Jersey, that basically just provide an avenue to sue the pants off of gun makers, distributors, and sellers, holding them responsible for the actions of criminals if they don't abide by some vague code of conduct. I think that one is going to face a court challenge. We may see challenges to the gun storage law. I think we may also see some more Commonwealth attorneys come out and say that they have no plans on enforcing either the gun storage law for homes or for vehicles as well. So there are a lot of moving parts in the Commonwealth of Virginia right now. And we're going to keep you up to date on all of these issues going forward. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Austin, Texas. A man sentenced in 2024 jugging case after pleading guilty. Not juggling, by the way, not a juggalo case. I don't think this guy had anything to do with Insane Clown Posse. Jugging is apparently following somebody home from a bank, an ATM, a check cashing store. You've seen them get money. You follow them back home, and then when they're getting out of their car, you run up and you rob them. In this case, 20-year-old Marquise Collins pled guilty to theft of property greater than $2,500, but less than $30,000. That is a felony offense in the Lone Star State. Collins did not, in my opinion, receive a sentence that is commensurate with the crime. He received a one-year sentence in the Travis County Jail for this felony, robbery. According to KXAN, Collins also received 6 days credit for the time that he spent behind bars awaiting trial, which honestly is not a lot of time, considering that this case was back, the crime was committed in December of 2024. So, I don't know what has to be done. I mean, granted, this is Travis County, one of the dots of blue in a sea of red in the Lone Star State. But, you know, again, if you want to stop these types of crimes from happening, you've got to make an arrest, you've got to get a conviction, but you've got to ensure that there are serious consequences here. And less than a year behind bars for robbery, I don't think it's a serious sentence at all. I think it's kind of a joke, to be quite honest. Today's Armed Citizen story. Now, this is a little unusual. Typically, we focus on armed citizen stories here in the United States. But I ran across this story from Australia, of all places. And I wanted to talk about it because of some of the quotes from police officials, from the experts that the media talked to about this particular case, because it's very different than how defensive gun uses are treated here in the U.S. So here's the headline: cops praise 75-year-old homeowner who shot alleged stabber during home invasion. That headline could be written, I think, you know, in a lot of jurisdictions here in the United States, maybe not San Francisco, maybe not Manhattan, but in many jurisdictions. And this is from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. It's from a news.com .au, which is not ABC. They write that police allege a 75-year-old man and 72-year-old woman identified as Keith and Diane Blessing were attacked by a knife-wielding man in their home at Torrington, a small village in northern New South Wales, just after midnight on Thursday. Ms. Blessing collapsed with a chest wound while her husband was slashed across his abdomen. Mr. Blessing called their version, the Australian version of 911, as their alleged attacker retreated onto the home's veranda. The alleged attacker identified as a Joshua Dylan Trethaway. No relationship to the Blessings, apparently did not know the Blessings. And police say that Trethaway was shot by Keith Blessing as he tried to get back into the home. Trethaway has now been charged with 2 counts of causing grievous bodily harm with intent to murder. He will appear in court at a later date. The Blessings, meanwhile, at last report, were in critical but stable condition at a local hospital. New England Police Superintendent Chris McKinnon was talking to reporters on Thursday morning, and he said, Mr. Blessing, quote, certainly did the best under very difficult circumstances to defend himself and his partner. It was quite impressive, given the extent of the injuries that he suffered. Indeed. And this is where things take a turn for the weird, at least for those of us in the United States. The news report goes on to say that Superintendent McKenna did not comment on whether charges would be pursued in relation to Mr. Blessing's actions, but said people were, quote, entitled to use reasonable force to defend themselves. He went on to say the older male obviously had received quite critical injuries up to that point, but all of these things will form part of our investigation. Okay. Criminal lawyer Sam Macedone said that Mr. Blessing was, quote, entitled to defend himself, provided that there was no proof of, quote, any force that was over the top. Again, his wife had been stabbed. He had been slashed at that point. The guy's trying to come back into their home. Do we really need these caveats here? Macedone said, what's important in any self-defense claim is what's going through the mind of that person. The fear they have and whether they feel like they have to do whatever it takes to protect themselves is how an outsider will decide what is reasonable and what is not. He added, I think if the other bloke wasn't armed, if he hadn't been stabbed, and given the age differences, then the shooting probably wouldn't have been justified. He said the fact that he'd already been stabbed by this bloke who was a lot younger and presumably a lot fitter than him, the fact that his wife had already been severely injured, means that there would have been enough fear in his mind to do whatever he could do to prevent this bloke from getting entry again. If this bloke is trying to re-enter, you know full well he's not doing it to give you a hug. Okay, now again, I don't disagree with anything that the defense attorney said. What's weird, though, is that he has to point this out. Again, the couple had both been stabbed. So, yes, you have a reasonable fear that you're going to be stabbed again if this guy breaks into your home. Now, look, even here in the United States, you have to have a reasonable belief that your life is in danger of death or great bodily injury, or somebody else's in danger of death or great bodily injury in order for you to act in defense of yourself or others, right? But because of Australia's gun control laws, because there are so few gun owners, and because Australia really looks down on the idea of using a firearm for self-defense, these defensive gun uses are really unusual in that country. And so I think that you have to have, you've got to explain it to people like they're little children. Because this is so unusual. I was just struck by some of the comments by the police superintendent, by this defense attorney, rationalizing or justifying using lethal force after somebody has been slashed and their wife has been stabbed. At that point, I would think that'd be pretty elementary, but apparently not for an Australian audience. All right, on to today's good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A follow-up on a story we first talked about, I think this was last week, from the Cincinnati, Ohio area. Woman whose car went off the road into a creek during a storm, and a Good Samaritan actually was able to pull her from the vehicle, but she didn't know who that Good Samaritan was. He hadn't been identified by police. Now the two actually have been reunited. The headline from a Fox 19 in Cincinnati: woman finds Good Samaritan who rescued her from creek. That Good Samaritan is a man named Brian Beersdorfer. And he came forward after Fox 19 aired a story about Jacqueline Rhodes looking for the man who saved her. There were several viewers who sent emails into the TV station saying, hey, I know this guy. Beersdorfer said, I was overcome with emotion a little bit, you know, tears of happiness and joy when he learned that she was okay. He said it was pouring rain the night of May 19th. He was on his way home. He stopped at a red light, and his dash cam showed Rhodes' car going past him and then off the road. He said, I saw a car come off the interstate, went straight into the ditch. He said other drivers kept going, but he pulled over. He ran towards the creek. said he found a high point to stand on. He could look down and see the car in the ditch. He yelled out to the driver, but he couldn't hear a response. So he walked around, followed the path that the car had taken. He said, I really struggled to get the passenger side open. He said, I finally did get it open. I'm sorry, a road said she was struggling to get the passenger side open because she couldn't get the driver's door open. She said, I finally got it open. He came down when I got it open, but he had to pull me literally over the car to get me out. Brian Beersdorfer said he really had no other choice but to stop. He said, I wouldn't be able to sleep that night. He said, knowing what that ditch is, knowing what's after that ditch, he said, you know, this is an open creek right here, but there's a tunnel down there. He said, you know, God puts you in places at the right place in the right time. He said, I've seen a lot of that lately, and so I think, you know, probably just working through me a little bit, that, you know, the Almighty was in charge. Beersdorfer and Rhodes have now connected, and they are planning to meet for dinner, which I think is great. And again, in the right place, at the right time, willing to do the right thing. Glad we have a name to put with this good deed. Brian Beersdorfer there in Cincinnati, Ohio. I know Jacqueline Rhodes thanks you, but we thank you too. All right, that is going to do, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here on Monday for the next edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, throughout the weekend. We're going to keep you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information. There's a lot going on. Didn't see the decisions in either Hamani or Wolford handed down by the Supreme Court today. They did release three decisions, so we're down to 23 decisions that are outstanding, two of them being those Second Amendment cases. Firearms Policy Coalition, however, did file a new lawsuit. Brady filed a lawsuit against the ATF seeking records today. We've got coverage for you on that at Bearing Arms as well. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership. You'll get all kinds of great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose. Obviously, those benefits get bigger as you move up from VIP to VIP Gold and VIP Platinum. But no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that as well. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Looking forward to seeing you back here again in a couple of days. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free. We'll be right back.